platformization is key, sadly. Yeah. Like, I just don't think, like, unless you want to become a security platform company, writing all your own transforms for all those tools to basically end up building the graph that a platform-based security company would have in the first place.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I think that is key, because that's the only way you can prioritize. But also, like, I did some research on, like, what AI recommends, like, a secure code. And AI is trained on the public internet, and most public internet examples are usable rather than secure. So if you ask AI to generate you some, you know, secure Terraform, for example, or OpenTofu or Kubernetes manifest, it will be just as insecure as if you ask it to just create a Kubernetes manifest. The word secure in there literally means nothing, because it's based on examples that are hello world.
Welcome to another edition of Cloud Unfiltered. I'm your host, Michael Chenitz. And today I have, and oh, by the way, this is a special edition from KubeCon Paris.
Oui, oui.
Oui, oui.
Bonjour. And that's about the extent of my French.
That's it. It's much better than me.
Apologize to the French viewers. I'm Matt Johnson. I am a cloud security field CTO with Palo Alto.
Field CTO. Wow, that's a very impressive title.
Apparently so. I still do most of the things a cloud security advocate or developer advocate does, but for a larger company, I guess.
Yeah, so you know, we've known each other a little bit now.
For sure. Yeah, going back to the good old Cisco days.
So you know, security has changed a lot since we've, you know, kind of probably during the Cisco days. You know, where are we today with, you know, with the threats and the things that people have to be concerned with?
Right. Small question to start
it's
off.
It's a very,
with.
You know, okay. I figure I'd cover the biggest thing first.
Yeah, for sure. So it's weird. So my Twitter handle is MetaHertz, and it has nothing to do with Facebook.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a play on the fact that as an industry, we constantly build extra abstraction layers, but we never collapse and remove the ones we've built on top of. So things are getting more complex for new entrants into our industry now, because I have to learn an extra 5 layers that still exist. We've not got rid of them. And I think security is exactly the same. You know, with every new layer of abstraction, with every new cloud, you know, item that you build on the stack, you're effectively creating a new breed of tools, new acronym bingo, new stuff that gives new results that absolutely still relates to some of the vulnerabilities found by the layer below its tools and the layer below its tools. But no one is really doing anything to kind of coalesce all that and go, well, actually, there's one application. And that application touches all of these layers.
Yeah.
And the context needs to be the application, right? It doesn't really matter about the different tools and the different layers if you're prioritizing the context of the application. So really complex is, I think, the TLDR answer on that. Like,
I love that, because you know it's absolutely true. I think that too many people think about the individual elements that are involved. And really, if you think about it from an application perspective, you have to think about what are the security needs of that application. First of all, you know, there's a development pipeline. There's all the stuff that goes into the development pipeline, like supply chain and all that kind of stuff.
That's, amen. Right.
There's, you know, and you don't know what you don't know. So you're like, I'm just going to consume this APIs. I'm just going to download it because here's the thing. I'm a developer. I don't know if you consider yourself a developer.
I script badly in Python when I have to.
But you know, the thing is that we're lazy in a good way, meaning that we have to figure out how to get something done really fast.
Right.
So what are we going to do? We're going to say, is there an API out there or an SDK or something that's out there that will do 90% of what I want to do?
Or does ChatGPT give me code that
or
runs?
Or does ChatGPT give me code that runs? And then I'm going to do 10% of the work to get that, glue it all together and make sure that it runs.
To put my business logic into that boilerplate that I've got from somewhere else.
So now you're relying on that upstream you know, kind of code to be secure. And how do you validate that? How do you know it's secure? How do you know what you're consuming? And by the way, this isn't a question that you ask once. This is a question that you have to ask every time you go to commit it, or even more than that.
Or every time the responsibility change hands to different teams. Because, you know, DevOps, DevSecOps, the budget is still sometimes not aligned to the team responsible for the application. And yet you have teams going, well, we need a, you know, we need cloud security posture management, or we need, you know, data leakage prevention, or we need CI/CD security, to your point. And we, you know, by the way, can I talk about product, or?
We'll keep it on the trend for now. All right, because we may have some, you know.
But like, for example, so obviously product, I have these conversations with customers. Yeah, yeah. And it's like, well, what are you actually trying to protect? You're trying to protect your application. Does it really matter if you're ticking the boxes of CSPM or this, or is what you really need is to know that, as you say, every time you commit, you're not going through any malicious GitHub actions, which don't allow someone to modify a package, which gets signed and ends up in your Kubernetes cluster. Like, all of that is your application. And actually, I think there's more security issues now in the, like, what was traditionally called the infrastructure side.
Yeah, yeah.
Because anyone with an API key, whether they found it maliciously or not, like, is effectively sat in your data center with what we used to call like a console cable, right?
Yeah.
So your application is everything. It's your CI, it's your open source dependencies, it's your, you know, your build tooling, it's your deployment pipeline. And if you don't have like end-to-end visibility on that, like, the attacker is just gonna find the weakest link. And
yeah.
And that's what we're seeing, right? It doesn't really, like, going, oh, I'm gonna spend my budget on this particular bit of security this year doesn't really work.
So you just made me think of a great concept. Maybe we should create an observability platform and call it console cable.
It's like, I'm in your data center.
Yeah.
Things have gone very wrong. Do you know? Yeah, maybe.
Like, yeah, I mean, it'd be cool. You know, it's kind of like that retro kind of...
just a blue logo.
Yeah,
right?
Just like, yeah, a blue, no, really with, like, flat cable. With serial at the end, you know, like, yeah, you know.
Cisco networkers represent, you know.
That's, I think that'd be awesome.
For sure. But there is a problem, right? It's SOC teams, security teams are not getting bigger.
Yeah.
And yet the number of tools they're expected to manually parse is getting bigger. And the number of issues that those tools are spitting out as issues is getting bigger. So your security team, unless you look at like a true platform approach where you end up with a graph of this is the application and this is what matters, and having that visibility to prioritize, your SOC team is getting less capable. Just like inflation with the currency, right? If you are staying the same, but you have more tools to read through and you have, you know, more data to go through with the same resource, you're getting less capable.
Yeah, and I think the other issue too is that, you know, if I think about when I was a cybersecurity consultant for 20 years, many years ago, the problem is that you're still very separated, meaning that, you know, if it's still in a lot of companies, you know, security means like network security.
Right.
And yeah, that means like firewalls and maybe IDSs or SIMs or something like that, you know, and a lot of these people haven't yet moved over to care about those areas. So now you have separate people because you still need that. So now you have like, developers or maybe a platform engineering team or somebody else that cares about something else, but now you're not getting the full view,
right,
of a lot of those different areas.
And that is what, like, number one priority, like, I've seen it in action. I've seen the power of taking all the data and building it into like a single graph so that you can have automations help prioritize, like reachability, for example. Do I care more about critical CVSS3 like 10 score if it's private or if it's on a publicly facing EOB, right? Things like that are very hard to do if the load balancer is then only pointing at Kubernetes, and then you need the Kubernetes like context to understand where that's going and which pod and which deployment that's getting routed to. Unless you are treating that as a single like attack vector and can show that to the customer going, hey, if you're going to patch one thing today, patch this. Like, you're never going to put those together, even if it is one team that's reading all those different results. Like, it's just too much. It's too much reading, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's, you know, when I talk to people in this industry, most people say what they're trying to solve right now is that problem of like log fatigue or alert fatigue, because of the fact that, you know what? I remember, just going back a little bit, I remember when I used to set these were Cisco days, I used to set up a lot of Cisco IDSs.
Right.
So I would set up a Cisco IDS. I would go back to that company, and I would do all the maintenance. I would go in there and I would make sure the tuning was right, so the DNS servers were in there, so the AD servers were in
right.
there.
Right. Yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
So like, all the things.
What have I missed?
I would do the false positives and all that kind of stuff, and really, you know, get it working right. And then I'd go back like a month later to see how everything's working. And I'd be like, so what have you done with it? Have you made sure, you know, everything's working and you're really tuning it in and stuff? Oh, we haven't even looked at it.
Yeah, you know, it's another dashboard.
Yeah, because there's so much that they're getting alerts,
right.
and it's just overwhelming them. So the problem that a lot of people are solving right now, and some people are starting to kind of use the word AI with this now, is to figure out, you know, how to minimize that, how to make sure that you only get the stuff that's relative to what is important. 100%. And everybody's solving this in different ways, you know, but at the end of the day, you really want something that just shows you what's important. Just that's all I care about.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's a hard problem. Don't get me wrong.
Platformization is key, sadly. Yeah. Like I just don't think, like, unless you want to become a security platform company, writing all your own transforms for all those tools to basically end up building the graph that a platform-based security company would have in the first place.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I think that is key because that's the only way you can prioritize. But also, like, I did some research on, like, what AI recommends, like, a secure code. And AI is trained on the public internet. And most public internet examples are usable rather than secure. So if you ask AI to generate you some, you know, secure Terraform, for example, or OpenTofu or Kubernetes manifest, it will be just as insecure as if you ask it to just create a Kubernetes manifest. The word secure in there literally means nothing because it's based on examples that are hello world.
Yeah, yeah.
And so even with like custom models that, you know, security vendors will be building and are becoming prevalent, you know, from us and a bunch of other vendors, unless you have the data. Yeah, you can show the data to the users on like a nice app graph, but you need that same data to fully fine tune the AI. Like, say you want AI to fix that problem for you. If that AI doesn't know what other dependencies that application's affecting, the AI is going to wreak havoc, right?
Yes.
You still need that fullness of knowledge about the application to do things with AI.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, AI is only as good as the data you give it.
Right.
So, I mean, you can see that now with like bias things and then everything else that's because it's been trained on the internet. You know, the internet might not be the best place to
right.
I mean, there might be a lot of spam and Monty Python and, you know.
I have never yet had it come back with the knights that say knee in a Kubernetes manifest, but maybe my prompt engineering just isn't up to scratch. That might be a good challenge.
It could be, you know, that could be something that you have to look into a little
right.
bit more.
Yeah, 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 for sure.
But really going back to that, I mean, that's the key to understanding that is getting the right points that you're getting all the data, transforming that data into a way that's understandable, and then being able to run something that's logical over top of it.
Yeah. Yeah, our systems are producing magnitudes more data than humans can handle nowadays.
Yeah.
And something needs to change. We need a shift in the way we are expecting to consume security events.
But I also go back to the fact that, you know, security is just one view. Really what we need is data aggregators that aggregate for all the same purposes and then have a security slice of it, have a logging slice of it,
right.
have a monitoring slice. Because right now you're really getting the same data that you need for all those things. But people are creating products, one for security, one for monitoring, but really it's you just need a central brain. You need that brain to figure out all that kind of stuff.
It's interesting you say that, actually. We're having this conversation like yesterday with a colleague of mine, Steve, who's actually sat in the corner over there and breaking the fourth wall. We were having a conversation about data protection.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, going into your cloud environment, looking for, you know, unregulated data sources, like someone's installed MariaDB or MySQL into a EC2 instance or a Kubernetes pod. And that's actually holding sensitive data, but you know, the data team that manages the RDS clusters and things on Amazon might not know about it, right? And the tooling required to find that data, is the same as the tooling that is required for a lot of the security data. And now we are bringing that into the fold, and that is becoming part of, you know, our end-to-end security product. But, you know, the observability and traceability and monitoring, they all have their own agents. And it's very much the same data, right?
It's all the same data.
And we're going to get to the point where we're outputting so much data to all these agents.
Yep.
Yeah, as you say, they might as well just be centralized into, we give everything here and it can take from the pipe whatever it wants.
Yeah.
I completely agree with that.
I think we will get to that because, I mean, logically that makes sense. I mean, if we didn't, then I'd be really sad about where we're at.
But I guess the only argument to that is, a security pipeline might want to be like, or a security tooling might want to be able to make decisions that actually change the state, block something, destroy something, kill something. You're never really going to want your SolarWinds, for example, tooling to be able to kill, destroy, delete.
Well, there would be nothing wrong to give SolarWinds full control. We've never seen that go bad.
I sure. Saying nothing. I guess there's different security boundaries, security requirements, which is probably why they've stayed separate. But if it is just only read-only data out in a way that you can prove it's not ending up in the wrong places, then it's becoming like everything is becoming everything, I guess, is your point.
Yeah. I mean, well, you have two things. You know, one is everything should become in everything, but then you have the problem on the other side of that, which is people try and find spot solutions. So they have a problem that's right in front of them right there. Like, I have Kubernetes and I've just learned how to use it, but now I have to go to prod. What do I have to do to be secure? Right. You know, and so they'll find a solution that helps them with that one particular scenario, but then doesn't help them with some of the other things.
And that is, I'm only going to do it apparently twice in this podcast, but that is the point of Prisma Cloud, where like, there is no point having the most, like, go and speak to Andy Martin at Control Plane and have him build you the most absolutely beautiful, secure Kubernetes cluster you've ever seen. Yep. Like, even the deployers can't deploy. It's that secure, right? But if that is running on top of a default EKS cluster on an EC, you know, on EC2 instances that have a service account that no one's actually minimized the IAM role, so you can literally, like, access it from somewhere, you know, like, that cluster being secure doesn't matter if the infrastructure below it isn't secure. And that's kind of the situation we're in. You end up with really pieces of real security, but the attacker doesn't care.
Yeah. And there is, you know, to the community, especially here at the Cloud Native community, there are a lot of great open source. And even your company has a lot of great open source. So people can choose from that and they can kind of glue together and stitch together their own solutions.
For sure. And I think it's one of those, like, that is a per company decision. You have to know what you need. I think that's the problem, right? Just like last year and the year before at Kubernetes, there was a, you know, pre-AI.
Yeah.
There was that whole, like, hey, don't become a Kubernetes vendor if what you actually want to do is run containers on Kubernetes. Because a lot of people were doing that whole, like, oh, well, we've got a Kubernetes engineering team and we're building ourselves our own Kubernetes. Why? Like, are you getting value out of that? No. Like, just run EKS. And I think that is true for security. There will be certain companies with certain regulatory requirements that go, actually, we will piece together this open source and this because this is what we need. But I think for the majority of customers, that is going to slow down their development capabilities that should be working on business value and, you know, all the other stuff we used to talk about with building versus buying Kubernetes.
And it's a real problem because, you know, unfortunately, and I've talked about this on other shows, you know, a lot of people are laying off right now. And as people lay off, you have less skill that in some of those areas. So, you know, even though you're really smart and you can create and stitch together this awesome solution,
is anyone going to support it?
Who's going to support it when you're gone, you know? And so, you know, that's why I think platform engineering is really taken off this year, is because of the fact that, you know, companies are crunching. People don't want to have to rely on a lot of different solutions and stitching together. They want one particular solution.
Right.
And they're tired of this whole movement. You know, they want to simplify.
Yeah. And it's interesting. You always get the argument of like, oh, we're a best of breed shop.
Yeah.
And it's like,
is there even a thing of that anymore? Like, I don't even know.
Oh, no. You still hear it occasionally. And it's like, well, what does best of breed define for you? Because, like, if your metric is, end-to-end security of the application that makes your money business.
Yeah.
Like, you can have the most secure single piece of it all you want. Like, the metrics need to zoom out a little bit from individual teams with individual budgets and actually look at the security posture of the application as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, a lot of people ask the wrong questions. They ask, how do I secure X component? Not what does my application need to be secure?
Right, you exactly. know? and even like this, even just understanding risk is hard. And again, yeah. I do sympathize with like smaller companies that don't have a dedicated security team. They might yeah. not even have a dedicated security person on a development team. It's just one guy that is interested in security and goes yeah. to DEF CON and is like, hey, we shouldn't be doing that. Because where do they go for like a drop in, you know, what matters most?
Yeah.
Again, we just need to stop creating abstractions, is my personal view. Like, we need to make the whole of IT a lot simpler for new entrants into our industry. But I think that's a whole different kettle of fish.
Yeah, you know, when you said something interesting that just reminded me of something, though, is that, I was a cybersecurity consultant for like 20 years. And what I've learned over that time was that companies care about risk. They don't care about security. And that's a big difference, yeah. you know, because they have an acceptable tolerance for a certain amount of risk, depending on what it is,
right.
which means that that might not translate to having to be secure in certain areas.
Yeah. If it doesn't matter if your application is down and you yeah. hold no customer identifiable information because you can't log into the thing, yeah. does it really matter?
Yeah, yeah.
for sure. And I think, again, like, you know, we've got FinOps now, which is like a big, like, hey, how much are you spending and can you quantify all this? Like, that team needs to talk to the InfoSec team that's creating a risk profile for the company. But those teams need to bring in the developers at an early place. Because if you're a developer and you're like, well, how do we secure this? And it turns out that actually it doesn't matter because it's not in the business's risk profile, then fine, but like communicate that more fully across your organization.
Yeah.
Rather than having like a self-appointed security guy going, oh my God, it's clear text. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting point.
Yeah.
I don't really have any more fully formed thoughts on that particular issue. But
one other person, and I don't remember who this was that brought this up, but somebody said there needs to be better security sharing systems. Like right now it could be a ticket, it could be something like that, but there needs better ways to track and in a company to and to kind of implement, you know, so that you can understand what, you know, what's important, like taking that risk profile, bringing it down, understanding the security and like bringing that all together. Like there's not really good solutions for that.
I think I personally think that still harks back to like building your own snowflake, right?
Yeah.
Your security snowflake, your wiring pieces together, and you can only get team B to do things through Jira, so you throw them a million Jira with an open source like tool that I think that's still part of the problem that needs solving. Like, you know, I hate the number of buzzwords we create for ourselves in the industry. I'm gonna use the one saying shift left.
Yeah.
But like for me, a security tool that developers have to deal with or developers have to fix things should be creating pull requests. It should be suggesting code. It should be going, hey, this is why this automated pull request exists. Here's some reading if you want to do on why we think this is a risk. And here's what we think you should probably do in 9 out of 10 cases.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but if that team only responds to Jira, then there is always that part of we can engineer the crap out of anything we want, right, from a security perspective. But if your company's mindset and your company's modus operandi is thou shalt have teams use Jira, then we're never gonna improve on that. Like there's always that, you know, there's always that cultural piece that breaks down some of these wonderful ideas.
So let's shift gears a little bit. So you do have some open source. What are the pieces of open source that you currently?
Sure. So we currently maintain Chekhov.io, which started off as a open source infrastructure as code security scanner. So it will scan your Kubernetes, Helm manifest, CloudFormation, Terraform, Tofu, you know, all that good stuff, and we'll be like, hey, we've got thousands of built-in policies. You probably shouldn't be running this container as user and group ID zero.
Yeah, yeah.
You probably shouldn't be mounting capnet admin. You probably shouldn't be doing all these things that, and it's actually interesting, like this doesn't come across well on a podcast, I appreciate, but a Kubernetes manifest that will successfully deploy an Nginx container is that big.
Yeah, yeah.
A Kubernetes manifest that passes the CIS security guidelines,
yeah.
that to the end user deploys exactly the same thing that looks exactly the same to the end user, is that big.
Yeah, so what he's showing is a small, maybe 1 to 2 inch diameter between his hands.
Like six lines versus
funky European meters and things like that. But
2 1/2 farthings, good sir. Yes.
Versus like 12 inches. So right. So he's just, that was what he was showing for my listening audience.
Hello, listening audience. I hope you are finding us wonderfully mic'd up here. But yeah, like that case in point is, you know, part of the problem.
Yeah, yeah. Because people could reasonably, even if you're a beginner to something like containerization, you could reasonably get something up and working.
Exactly.
But it takes a lot more effort to do that in a way that's secure.
Right. And all the examples you will find online are the get it up and working thing.
Exactly.
Right? Because people want the yeah. hello world, move on quickly yes. kind of vibe.
Because they're getting paid, and it's fair, because they're getting paid to get the application out the door. They were never told that they're going to have to get it out the door securely. They always assume that I'm a developer. I'm just here to develop.
There will be, yeah. And there's that whole like secure by default culture, but yeah. if that always goes out the window when there's a deadline. Yeah, exactly. So, yes.
So there's a new thing I'm doing on my show. It's called Buzzworthy or Buzzworthless.
Okay.
So I'm going to ask you a few words. And then you could tell me if it's buzzworthy or buzzworthless. So let's start with, since we're doing security, I'm going to switch this up a little bit. Shift left. Buzzworthy or buzzworthless?
Buzzworthy.
Yeah?
Like not pissing off your developers when you're trying to mandate security into your org. Like if you don't get developer buy-in, there's no point.
Yeah.
Like buzzworthy. Like. Do I think all the places it's used are buzzworthy? No, but the core idea of giving developers visibility into the security process from the start, like yeah. through pull requests, through things like that, 100% buzzworthy.
I like that. How about, okay, so now I'm going to go a little bit out of security. How about DevOps? Buzzworthy or buzzworthless?
Depends if the CEO cares. Like it's one of those that it's all posture versus technology. Like you can layer as many DevOps tools onto your team, but if your product managers are writing the developers for a waterfall release date, then it doesn't really matter, right? It's
I still didn't get an answer.
Sorry. Buzzworthless. I'm gonna add context in so many of these to protect myself.
That's fine. And to me, I mean, to me, the reason why it's buzzworthless is because nobody can give me the same definition of what DevOps should be.
Right.
So that to me makes it worthless.
Because it's a human problem.
Yes.
It does not actually matter about your organization's technical stack. Yeah. It is a human problem, and it's whether the funds and the time and the training and all that are there
yeah.
to turn your development into like an agile style development.
So last one, platform engineering. Buzzworthy or buzzwordless?
Oh, I so want to talk about this. Buzzworthless.
Really?
Even though I really like it. But I liked it when it was SRE, and I liked it when it was the infrastructure team. And, you know, dev teams should not be snowflaking their own deployment infrastructure. And for all kinds of valid reasons, it is easier for security, it is easier for compliance, it is easier for, you know, everyone to work with a platform engineering team. So for that reason, it's good. But again, it's one of those buzzwords that like, you don't need a license to use it. So it hides so many industry sins by people just plastering like the like platform engineering marketing term onto it. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. And so last question here, you know, you're at KubeCon. What do you like? What interests you?
For sure. Obviously, we are at the KubeCon of AI, as I think it will become now. Every single keynote was about AI or will be about AI. So, you know, there's a lot
of... Or if it hasn't been AI, it will write one about itself.
It will write one about itself and replace it on the edit afterwards. Yes. Yeah, like, because we gave it access to the internet. Sure. Apart from AI, like, there's a lot of consolidation. A few years ago, there were like 10 different like block storage CNCF options that had big booths, right? Yep. And it's kind of nice that like we're kind of simmering down to a more usable set of CNCF components.
Yeah.
I think, you know, there needs to be a focus going forward on usability. Like if I have to try one of a thousand to the N of one of a thousand to work out which bits make me a usable production cluster, like that's no good.
Yep.
So I quite like that we're kind of simmering down. We're kind of ending up with best of breed if, you know, within that CNCF landscape. So that's kind of exciting. I do think AI is going to change everything. I don't know what that's going to look like, but, you know, we're already seeing AI write Kubernetes manifest. We're already seeing it help, you know, Copilot and all that.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to do it securely. I think there might only be two industries left at like KubeCon in 3 years time, and that's going to be the AI bit and the security bit. But yeah, we'll see.
We'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens.
I mean, right now, I think, you know, unfortunately with any new tech, you know, AI gets used for a lot of marketing and marketecture.
Right.
And, you know, about maybe 5 to 10% of the companies right now are actually doing stuff that's truly innovative and interesting with AI.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
And in this landscape, I'm saying, I don't know about outside this landscape.
Yeah. One thing I would say, and we actually have it built into one of our open source tools. So Chekhov, that I kind of went back to, the infrastructure as code scanner.
Yeah.
One thing we found, especially developers trying to understand the output of that tool.
Right? Yeah.
We've tied that into OpenAI with an API key, where instead of our built-in explanations of like why we've triggered
sure.
policy and your Kubernetes manifest is bad, it comes up with, you know, infinite numbers of different wording, which clearly appeal to different people's way of thinking. And so it allows developers to kind of have a few different ways of contextualizing an issue that maybe they would have gone, I don't understand it. I'm not a security person. Like, why should I care? So like the natural language ability to take things from the internet and explain them in different ways, because, you know, I think very hands-on, you might not, like, people think in different ways. I think that is a really...
Not everyone thinks like me? What are you talking about?
I'm really sorry to let you down here. But I think that as a initial use, without going, oh, it needs to write my code for me, it needs to do all these, like, production-ready things, even just re-explaining things in different ways is quite powerful. Yeah. And you see, we built that into Chekhov like a year ago, and we've had really positive feedback on that.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on here.
Anytime. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot.
Sweet.